antiquated ideas again. You know, I don't know, maybe you didn't pay attention to the dates, but I'm posting this right after I'm posting the other one before this, about perspective. But since I'm in a talking mood, figured we'd gather around the campfire and tell you about something interesting. And that is the new All Quiet on the Western Front movie, done by Netflix. And so, Netflix is actually really weird to me, because sometimes they're, like, super PC, but then sometimes they have, like, masterpieces, you know? Like, they had those, the one on, like, Ruby Ridge, they had the one on Waco, and those were, like, not PC at all. So it's interesting sometimes when Netflix comes out with shit that's, like, kind of normal, actually. Or if any, like, weirdly enough, they might actually even be a little bit right-leaning, you know, which is, I don't know. Or maybe it's just the stars align and left and right have the same goal and the same perspective on something. Anyway, the new All Quiet on the Western Front movie is not PC at all. They actually did a very good job, and I was surprised to see an all-white cast. You know, it makes sense you would want an all-white cast, considering it's the Western Front, Europe, 1918. Yes, the French had, like, the Senegalese troops, and there were Indians as well who fought under the British on the Western Front. But for the most part, you know, it wasn't mixed troops, or, like, colonial troops. But the movie, I've seen so much criticism about this movie, and I don't understand it. I think that what's happening is people are comparing it to A, the book, or B, the original movie. And from that, I do understand. You know, if you're comparing it to those, yeah, it's not really like a faithful retelling of the book or the original movie. But with the new version being in German, first of all, I think that makes it so much more powerful and impactful. Even though, interestingly enough, you know, the reason that the first All Quiet on the Western Front was in English is that it was actually supposed to appeal to Brits and Americans, and show them that the Germans were not the monsters that their propaganda had made them out to be. And I do find that really interesting, that the movie was purposefully done in English to get that perspective across. And I wasn't alive during the 20s or the 30s, so I don't really know if it accomplished that. But I do know that it was actually even shown to the military in some circumstances. So I find that really interesting. But World War I, you know, has seen kind of a resurgence of popular media over the last couple of years. And, I mean, if you could call it a resurgence, World War I was, like, never very popular as a subject of interest. And I don't understand why, because World War I is fucking fascinating. I mean, World War I is, to me, just as interesting as World War II is. A lot of the same shit kind of happened, and there's a lot of foreshadowing of World War II in World War I. Just like there's a lot of foreshadowing of World War I in the Civil War and the War in the Balkans, I'm really blanking on this one. Jesus, why can't I remember it? You know, the one where the British fought the Russians, and the French as well fought the Russians. The Crimean War. Yeah, there we go. That one really, I don't know why that escaped me. But, yeah, there's a lot of foreshadowing of World War I. You see, like, and this is actually something that the movie illustrates so fucking well, is the clash between, and this is one of the main themes of World War I when you learn about it, is the clash between old ideas and new weaponry, where the ideas of warfare had not caught up to the weaponry that was involved in the war. You know, still, a lot of the ideas were, and World War I did pioneer a lot of the tactics used in World War II. You know, if anything, all of the major ideas, like look at the idea of the German Blitzkrieg in World War II. The idea of the Blitzkrieg comes from World War I, where they had these quick assault troops, you know, the Stoßtruppen, and they would go out in these little raiding parties and attack the enemy trenches and then fuck off. And the other thing is that at the end of the war, most people think that World War I was always a war of attrition, always fixed in the trenches, and that's not true. 1915, 1916, 1917, it most definitely was. 1914 and 1918, it was not. 1914 and 1918 both, it was a war about movement, and it was a war about speed. You know, the whole plan of the Germans originally was to essentially blitzkrieg through Belgium to Paris and end the war before it could really even start, so that they would avoid a two-front war. It's just that they made the fatal miscalculation of Belgium, one, putting up a decent defense, and two, the British getting involved. So yeah, the French were kind of caught off guard, as they usually are. But again, a lot of people shit on the French. No, the French had an excellent, outstanding military at the time. They were very professional. They were very well organized. They had poor leadership. And that's something you see with the Italians as well, is that the Italians had very motivated, skilled fighters. But what became of them is kind of tragic because of their leadership. And All Quiet on the Western Front, the new version, because I'm not going to talk about the old versions. They're excellent movies. They illustrate so many things about World War One very, very well. So we're only going to focus on the new one because it's new. But also because, honestly, it's one of my favorite war / anti-war movies, if not my all-time favorite now. There's so much that I could talk about this movie. I hope I have the time to before I have to get off the highway. Get off of the recording. But they illustrate so fucking well that discrepancy, that difference between the average soldier and the leaders. You know, they have, I can't remember the name of the general, they make up the name of the general. And you follow Paul Baumer and his friends, like there's whatever the fuck his name is, Kaczynski, Krupp, a few other ones, and it's cool to see them, because you get the average infantryman's perspective about the war, and you see why the leadership was so fucking awful toward them. You see how the leadership really destroyed the morale of the men. And not only that, but how the leadership was accustomed to these old tactics and these honestly antiquated ideas about warfare and about like the glory of war, and what it means to fight for your country. It's very interesting to see, and like I said, they do a great job of depicting it. Like you have the typical general who sends his troops in without care. But one of the scenes at the end that really gets to me, and it is something that happened that commanders did on both sides, is at the end of the war, they wanted to gain as much ground as possible. They wanted to be, they wanted to make a name for themselves in the last, hours before the end of the war, by launching attacks. And so you see the general, he commits his troops to one final battle to try and retake this trench that they actually they started out in at the start of the movie. And you get this this overwhelming sense of dread and like pointlessness and the fucking emotions that this movie is able to convey. That's really where this movie is a masterpiece. Is it historically accurate? No. Is it realistic, not all the time. And a lot of people complain about that, that the movie lacks in some of those areas. You know, one of the things that you'll see is, and it's something that kind of bothers me about new period pieces, is you'll see guys running around with their rifles in a low or a high ready position. And, you know, they weren't taught to do that. That's just like a modern, what do you call it? Like washing of history, where they show these guys looking all tactical and shit because that's what people expect to see, even though it's not reality. So it's little things like that that bother me. Or there's this scene at the start where artillery hits their trench, and then when they, you know, are done with the artillery barrage, it's like the trench is a fucking, like, it's like 8 feet wider than it was originally, and the artillery has done like a lot more damage than it would have realistically. And for as gory as the movie is, they did actually skip out on some gore, which is weird. Like the artillery, like, you know, if you read diaries of guys who served in World War One, they talk about like finding body parts of people. Like you would never find a whole person sometimes. You would find like a fucking boot, or you'd find a hand, you know, or half of somebody's torso, which is honestly pretty fucking nightmarish. And the movie kind of failed to portray that, which, I don't know, maybe there was some sort of restriction with Netflix and they, you know, they weren't allowed to portray like something that gruesome, which is disappointing, but you don't really need to see it to have the point get across. It's just, if you're already going to have like this gory kind of fucked up movie, why not include it? Why not go for the realism? You know, that the actual, like, that's where the horror aspect of it comes in, is from reality. Like, oftentimes, you know, reality is more, far more horrific than anything fantasy could be. And so anyway, yeah, this general, you know, he sends his troops into one final battle, and you just get this overwhelming sense of like pointlessness and like, holy fuck, why is he doing this? You know, like stop. And you feel so bad because you're like, you're kind of on the edge of your seat, and you're like, shit, dude, you know, like, Paul only needs to survive this battle and then the war is over. And that was it for a lot of people. You know, they only had to make it, what, another 20 minutes, another 5 minutes, another 1 minute before the war ended. And they didn't, you know, it was just, their ticket got punched in right then. And they didn't make it to the end of the war. And that's so fucking tragic. And the movie portrays that incredibly well. Something I think that what they do, the perspective of the movie is, it's not a historical truth, it's an individual truth. And the war is the war through the eyes of the soldiers, you know? So things might not look the way that you'd expect them to look, because to a soldier on the ground, you know, the things that they remember, the things that they went through, they might embellish these experiences, because to them, you know, this is the worst fucking thing that ever could have possibly happened. And so, for these soldiers, the war was different. You know, the war through their eyes was different than it might have been through a completely impartial historical look at the war. And that's something that's kind of hard to understand. And that's something that, you know, that's another thing about perspective, is trying to understand that, yeah, you know, the things that these guys saw, and a lot of the things that these guys remember that they talk about are not necessarily like factual truths, but it's still a truth to these people. Like, they still experience that. It's entirely real to them. And it's just as valid in that way. And you know, that's something that the movie, I think that's what it gets across really well, is it conveys individual emotion, it conveys individual experience so fucking well. And it does a great job of humanizing the Germans, who for a long time, a long, long time, we've always been taught that they're these inhuman monsters, you know, that they're just awful. And they're not, you know, they were people just like everyone else. They didn't necessarily want to be there. They didn't want to be subjected to the killing and the terror and the horror and the depression and, you know, all these things. And it's interesting also that they show the French, because it's from the German perspective, you know, the French are shown as being these brutal monsters, which in a lot of cases, yes, the French were. The French were fucking awful. They were horrific toward the Germans in the same way that the Germans would have treated the French, you know? It's about understanding that it's not just one side or the other that's in the right or the wrong. It's both sides. Both sides equally participated in making this one of the worst wars to have ever happened. It's not just the Germans. You can't just blame the Germans for the war. Just like you can't blame the British alone. You can't blame the French alone. If there's anyone you could blame, it's the Austro-Hungarians. But even then, you know, it's not completely their fault. So really the war is almost nobody's fault and everybody's fault at the same time. Something else that I wanted to touch on, because I heard somebody talking about it, like shitting on this one particular scene, and I didn't like this at all, because I thought the scene was so necessary and so impactful. So if you want to skip ahead, or I don't know, just maybe fucking stop the podcast here, I don't know, skip like fucking 5 minutes ahead or some shit, see if I'm still talking about it, because I don't know when I'm going to be done. But spoiler alert, is that there's a scene where one of Paul's friends is in an aid station after this battle where they get separated. So he finds his friend, right? And he's giving him, like, he brought him some soup, and the friend's laying there, and he got shot in the leg, I think is what happened. And so he's like, well, you know, I'm not going to make it, and, like, just fucking put me out of my misery, that kind of shit. I'm never going to walk again. I'm never going to be useful again. And they're telling him, like, no, dude, like, you're going to be fine. They can fix this. And honestly, you know, it's not that bad. But to this guy, it's the worst thing in the world. And the shit that he's seen, he can't live with, unfortunately. And that's, you know, it's just hard for people to cope with the reality of the war. And so this guy, he grabs a fork, right, while his friend, while Paul is not looking, and while Kat Kaczynski is not looking, and he starts stabbing himself in the neck, you know, to kill himself. And maybe that's a dramatized version of how somebody might kill themselves, considering that I'm pretty sure, you know, he could have gotten access to a firearm pretty easily. But also, you have to understand that, you know, in the moment, when you're overwhelmed by these emotions and you're overwhelmed by the trauma of what you've experienced, and let alone, you know, the fact that you're laying in an aid station surrounded by dead and dying men who are crying and moaning and bleeding everywhere, you know, as some of them with their fucking guts hanging out right next to you, you're in hell, you know, and you definitely feel like there's not a way out of this when you see all these guys dying around you. And the experience of the war, like, and it's something that it's so necessary to me to show the mental aspect that was inflicted upon these poor soldiers, you know, of how the fuck do you go home after an experience like that? How do you go home? How are you expected to just live a normal life after that? And so many World War I veterans could not assimilate to normal life. You know, in Germany, the Freikorps was a huge thing after the war, because you had these soldiers who they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to live a civilian life after the war, and these guys are riddled with PTSD, trauma, shock from their experience, and who wouldn't have that? So people say that that scene was unnecessary, but I don't think so. I really think that to me is one of the most moving scenes in the entire movie, showing that this guy is so fucked up from the war. He's gone through so much shit that he just cannot see a way out of it. He cannot see himself ever getting better. He doesn't know how to live with it. And so he doesn't. He kills himself because he can't take it anymore. And that's really fucking hard to see, honestly. Like, that's such an emotional and impactful moment, in my opinion. And it's a sad reality to think that people still do that. That's the reality of war, is that anyone who's seen combat, you know, they don't get out of it unscathed. Everyone is wounded in some way coming out of a war. And so to call that scene like irrelevant or unnecessary is disrespectful to the people who had to go home after that and who lived with that and who continued fighting that war in their head for, you know, fucking 40 years after the war. So it's just something to think about. The landscaping, the design of everything, the sound design, they got the uniforms right, amazingly. They got the uniforms, like, down to a T. So that was really nice to see. That they didn't do any embellishing as far as, you know, like, what sort of weapons they would have used. The unit movements. Now, one of the things that they did get a little bit wrong, and it's a bit of a stereotype, is when they're going out into no man's land, you know, it's kind of just a free-for-all charge. And there was actually quite a bit more structure to charges, to attacks across no man's land than, like, you know, because it's kind of a waste of your troops to just have them run in a frenzy across no man's land with no cohesion, no communication between the units. So no, actually runners between battalions and companies were incredibly important. They had field telephones in the trenches. You know, it was the job of your NCOs and your lieutenants, you know, to keep everyone in line, and organized. So that's something to think about. But it also doesn't bother me that they showed, everyone just kind of like rushing blindly across no man's land, because that's kind of what you come to expect from a World War I movie. So it's nothing new. Still, I think I would have liked to see maybe a little bit more of the actual tactics used. Because like I said, nearly all of the tactics in World War II, that were used were born out of the tactics developed in World War I, or even in wars prior to that. Just some thoughts. Overall, though, man, I cannot talk about how good that movie was and how I think everyone needs to see that movie. I think that movie needs to be shown in schools because of how good it is. It's just that impactful. And if you really want to show somebody, hey, this is what war is like and it's fucked up, that's the way to show them, you know, is with a movie like that. And yeah, people are going to be like, oh, like, yeah, kids can't see that. Yeah, so show them in fucking junior or senior year. It's going to fuck people up. And you know what? If they can't take it, then they can leave. But people need to understand that. And it's a huge problem that I have with the gun community. And it's a huge problem I have with the quote-unquote, like, prepper community or the militia community. Is that guys will sit there and yearn for war, right? And not understand it. Like, there is glory to dying in battle. Don't get me wrong. Okay, my ancestors would have died in battle. But there's just as much glory in going home and being able to raise a family. You know, being able to fucking be there for the next generation and tell them about the things that happened. Actually tell them about the things that you've done. And what I like to say is that if you're fighting for a movement, if you're fighting for a belief, okay, if everyone's a martyr, everyone dies fighting for their belief, who goes home and passes that belief on? Who then is left to tell the next generation why they need to carry on the torch, let alone that they need to carry it all together? But a lot of people don't get that. And I think that seeing something that depicts war like that would possibly wake people up, you know, because You've got to be a fucking lunatic to look at World War One and be like, God, I wish I was a soldier on the Western Front. Oh, I wish I was shitting in a bucket. I wish I had trench foot and rats eating out my asshole. Yeah, right. Oh, damn, I wish I saw my best friend get fucking blown to pieces by a 105mm artillery round fired from a distance of 2 miles away. Cool. I love that. So yeah, those people can go fuck themselves. They're stupid, and there's honestly something fucked up with them in the head. I think a lot of people, though, they have that opinion of war. Because don't get me wrong, I would fight, and if I really, really needed to die for my beliefs, I would do it. I do want to go home, though. I want to go home for my kids. You know, I want to have a family. I don't have kids yet, but I want to go home for my family. And I want to go home for my partner, my girlfriend, my wife. I don't want to give that up, you know, because of some stupid fucking conflict. But somebody's got to fight it, because if there's nobody to stand up for themselves, if there's nobody to stand up for the ideas, then they're just going to get trampled on. You know, if you don't stand up for your own freedom, you're going to lose it. And that's kind of that's another sad reality of war, is that unfortunately sometimes war is necessary, as ugly as it is. And it's good to understand both sides of it. You know, it's good to understand that war is fucking disgusting and brutal and horrific, and nobody escapes it. But it's also good to understand that if you need to fight for your freedom, you've got to fight for your freedom, and there's no way around it. Like, somebody has to do it. So all in all, you know, I think you guys really should watch that movie and take what you will from it. Maybe you won't see it the way that I see it. Maybe you won't like it as much as I like it, but I thought it was a great movie. So, yeah, anyway, that's it.